It's time to head into the barn. This is the Bet America Radio Network. You're in the barn. In the barn. Talking horse racing news, events, and a whole lot more. Here's your host, Jason Bean.
All right, and a good Wednesday morning, y'all. Welcome into the barn, the Bet America Radio Network. So glad you could join us for another edition of the barn. Hope everybody had a very good and safe Fat Tuesday celebration. Mardi Gras Stakes out of Fairgrounds. Our picks were 6 and 12, and they ran good. They ran third and fourth, and the 12 was like 36 to 1. He loomed up second, but faded down the stretch. But the 3 to 5 shot King Lee Court beat us. So, alas, our first prognostications here on the barn led to a third to fourth place finish, but a respectable third and a fourth place at that. But busy show today. We're going to be joined here in a little bit by Peter Aiello, who is the new voice of Oaklawn Park. Excited to talk to Pete. Pete's a close friend and a guy I've gotten to know over the last few years. He actually, after I left River Downs in 2008, took over for me there, and that was the start of his career. And, of course, he's blossomed into the now voice of Gulfstream Park in the summer and the fall months. He did Hialeah up till he took the Oaklawn job, also called it Calder or a Gulfstream Park West, if you will. But Pete's got some really cool stories, and he's just a really, really good dude. I think the Oaklawn job was tailor-made for him because he's the kind of guy that after the races wants to go and talk about the races and wants to go out to the you know, the local watering hole and handicap the next day's card. And, you know, whereas somebody like me wants to go home and, you know, sit in my apartment and stare at the wall for the rest of the night till I go to bed and then go back to the track again. But really excited to talk with Pete. We'll have a little bit of an extended conversation with him, and I think everybody will enjoy it. Pete's just a really cool dude. You can follow him on Twitter at Announcer Pete. He's a big Facebook guy, though, so maybe find him on Facebook is better as well. We're also going to, off the success of the Andy Serling game, people raved. I got rave reviews. People love the Andy Serling game. I already got folks lining up to play it in the coming weeks. So if you want to play any of our games for a chance to win Bet America prizes, and who knows, maybe even some wagering credits. Maybe I can talk the management folks into some wagering credits for prizes. Email me, barn@betamerica.com. You can always find me on Twitter at BeamyAwards. But we're going to do some comedy stuff for you today. If you've heard the famous Jeff Foxworthy bit, you know, you might be a redneck if. Well, we're going to do you might be a horse player if, because horse players are a totally different breed of human being than almost everybody. My mom owned a poker room in a casino for 25 years, and I'll never forget one time she was I was working in there for her, and I said, oh, man, I said, these poker players are just nuts. And she goes, honey, they ain't nothing compared to horse players. And turns out she was right. And so, but, you know, I'm a horse player. My dad was a horse player. And we horse players, we love each other through thick and thin and through the good times, through the bad times, through the degeneracy, and through the responsible wagering. We're always there for each other. So we'll play that here in just a little bit. But a lot going on at BetAmerica.com and BetAmerica Extra, which is where you find this show. It's at BetAmerica.com/extra. But I wanted to talk about a couple of things coming up. First of all, Bet America does a lot of Dubai coverage, and the Dubai racing, you know, each Thursday morning, they offer that fantastic racing from Dubai. And at Bet America, we have a live blog, free past performances, and tip sheets, and they're usually available Wednesday morning at betamerica.com/extra for Maidan's races. And you can follow all the action, and we're going to try to get some guests here as we get closer to the Dubai World Cup, which is shaping up to be, as it always is, a fantastic day of worldwide racing. But it's always a little more fun when there's a number of American competitors, which there is going to be this year. So we will we'll talk more about Dubai in the coming weeks. But again, head to betamerica.com/extra for that live Dubai blog, free pass performances, and tip sheets, all available. They should be available now, actually, for Wednesday mornings for Maidan for the card coming up tomorrow. And we also have a new promotion Of course, we always have the $300 sign-up bonus. When you sign up, you can deposit up to $300, and we'll match that. And you know, you earn that $300 back as you play. One of the best sign-up bonuses in the industry, and you know, amongst other great promotions that we have. But we have a new promotion I wanted to talk about: the Road to the Kentucky Derby promo. It starts this weekend with the El Camino Real Derby and the Southwest Stakes. And the way it works is, if you bet the winner of any Derby prep, you get a free bet on the Derby on that same horse. So let's say, coming up the Southwest Stakes, you like the number 5 horse. They haven't drawn yet, so let's say his name's Billy McGirty. You like Billy McGirty. So you bet $5 to win on Billy McGirty, and he wins the Southwest Stakes. If he makes it to the field in the Kentucky Derby, you're going to get a free bet on that horse on Derby Day. And so there's, for more information on that, just go to betamerica.com/extra. Click on the promotions button on the side, and you can look up the Kentucky Derby 2016 free bet promotion. But it's a lot of fun stuff we're trying here at betamerica.com, and we hope that our players who are already with us are enjoying them, and the players who are not with us, what the heck are you waiting for? Go over to betamerica.com, get signed up for an account, make that initial deposit of up to $300, and we're going to match that for you. It'll be a lovely experience. I was a BetAmerica player way back in the day, and then I stopped gambling for the most part. But just now getting refamiliarized with the site since joining the team here, and there's just some fantastic stuff going on there. It's a great wagering platform, and we encourage you to sign up if you haven't already for BetAmerica. So do that. Well, we're going to head out to just a short timeout. We'll hear from our friend Kayla Straw a little bit more about BetAmerica. When we come back, we're going to play a little You Might Be a Little Horse Player If. And after that, we're going to be welcoming in Peter Aiello, the track announcer at Oaklawn Park. So here's Kayla.
Hello, this is Kayla Straw, and I'm here to tell you all about BetAmerica.com. It is the fastest growing legal, safe, and secure website to place all your bets on horse racing. BetAmerica covers over 200 racetracks from North America, the UK, and my home country, Australia. New players to BetAmerica receive a 100% bonus on your first deposit up to $300. That's the best sign-up bonus available today. It's time to play the BetAmerica way.
Well, Kayla, thank you so much for all that information. And we're actually going to try to have Kayla on the show very soon. She's been making a comeback to riding, and look forward to talking to her about the resumption of her riding career. You know, she got off to a fast start down in California. She was a star on the show Jockeys. And, you know, the Southern California circuit always very, very competitive. So look forward to catching up with Kayla sometime soon to talk about her career. But first, we want to have a little fun, and we want to, you know, again, this is a takeoff of the old Jeff Foxworthy, you know, you might be a redneck if, but it's called You Might Be a Horse Player If. So let's get some Jeff Foxworthy type music going. All right. There it is. Perfect. All right. When you refer to your overdrawn bank account as a minus pool, you might be a horse player. When Ajax is a Canadian quarter horse track and not a cleaning product, you might be a horse player. When you refer to your friend who spends all his time with his spouse as being gelded, you might be a horse player. When you gain 5 pounds and refer to it as losing your bug, you might be a horse player. When you can recall how much a 6-horse trifecta box costs faster than you can recall your birthday, you might be a horse player. If you've ever red boarded to Andy Serling on Twitter, you might be a horse player. If the only time you set your alarm for 5 a.m. is because it's Dubai World Cup Day, you might be a horse player. If you know the name of the morning line maker at Naira, but not your wife's best friend, you might be a horse player. When you refer to your oldest child as your first crop, you might be a horse player. When you refer to the start time of any event in your life as post time, you might be a horse player. When you get a cramp during playtime with your partner and you tell her that you've pulled up, you might be a horse player. When you get stood up and refer to your date as a scratch, you might be a horse player. When the guy at 7-Eleven bends under the counter to grab a form when he sees you walking in the parking lot, you might be a horse player. If you name your pets after famous racehorses, you might be a horse player. When you say exactor just because it's more fun to say than exacta, you might be a horse player. If you correct people when they say Trevor Denman is British, you might be a horse player. If the only French you know is Il Sont Pâti, you might be a horse player. If you were more sad when Suffolk Downs closed than when your house got foreclosed on, you might be a horse player. If your HANA membership card is more prominently positioned in your wallet than your driver's license, you might be a horse player. If you've ever been up at 4 a.m. and talked Zimbabwe racing with Candace Hare on Twitter, you might be a horse player. If your iPhone has Pletcher in autocorrect, you might be a horse player. If the DRF has only two tracks in it for $7 and you still buy it, you might be a horse player. If you text your friends because you saw Deshaun Parker at the grocery store, you might be a horse player. If you're willing to walk 2 miles to the track to save $4 on parking, you might be a horse player. If your hall pass girl is a paddock hostess, you might be a horse player. If you know the fastest way from Santa Anita to Los Al on a Saturday night, you might be a horse player. If you felt guilty when Gary Stevens quit Twitter because you always used to talk shit to him, you might be a horse player. And finally, if you hoped Steve Coburn would keep blabbing his mouth after the Triple Crown Trail of 2014 because it would keep racing in the headlines, you are definitely a horse player. All right, so a little fun here on a Wednesday in the barn. We're going to head out to time. When we come back, we're going to be joined by the one and only Peter Aiello, the voice of Oaklawn Park, to talk about not only his career, but his new job at the helm of the microphone at one of the best meets in the wintertime. I'm really excited to talk to Peter, and we'll do that after this short time out. It's the Bet America Radio Network.
This is the Bet America Radio Network. You're in the barn with Jason Beam.
All right, welcome back to the Bet America Radio Network. You're in the barn, and we are pleased to go out to beautiful Hot Springs, Arkansas, and welcome in our next guest. He's the track announcer at Oaklawn Park, took over the helm this season. You've also heard him at Gulfstream Park, Calder, Hialeah, and, of course, one of my personal favorites, beautiful River Downs. It's Pete Aiello. Peter, how are you?
Good, Jay. How are you doing?
Good, man. How's things going in Hot Springs? Or it's actually Cold Springs this time of year, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's for a Florida guy, it's beautiful springs because we don't get the four seasons in Florida. We have the air conditioning on in Christmas Day, so I'm loving this cold weather, and so is my body. I feel a lot better than I had when I left Miami.
You know, speaking of the air conditioning, you know, this is a total aside point, but Larry Colmus often complains about your over-air conditioning use when you guys share the booth, doesn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. And as I try to explain to him, and something that you can definitely appreciate, I think that between the two of us, we're probably four or five Larry Colmuses. So when there's a bigger unit, you need a little bit more juice to run the engine, and the engine tends to run a little hot, if you know what I mean.
I'm the same way. When Portland Meadows decided to run the summer meet a few years ago, my boss, I'll never forget, he's like, is there anything you need? I said, yeah, air conditioning, because they'd never run in the summer up there. And so they brought up this little machine, and I said, no, no, no. And so by the second week of the season, I had this thing. It sounded like a jet was landing in the announcer's booth. And I told him, I said, I don't care. I don't care if it's the loudest thing on earth. The last thing I'm going to be is up here, you know, sweating like a hog. And, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about your River Downs time. And I'm sure we have some River Downs air conditioning stories, too, because the old unit in that room was a little goofy. But, you know, Pete, the new job, obviously, at Oaklawn just getting underway. How's things been settling in for you there?
Well, you know, it took me probably, in all honesty, it probably took me about maybe a week and a half worth of race days to kind of get back into my groove. I mean, it's a whole new set of surroundings, a whole new set of fans, a whole new set of horses, a whole new set of colors. Everything is different about it, relative to everything that I've been used to. So was a situation where I had to get used to a lot of different things at the same time. So I'm sure if you talk to the local fans and hopefully management would say that they didn't notice that, but as an announcer yourself, you definitely appreciate that we're always our own worst critic. So I was doing all right, and I was making some good calls, but it was like working overtime to get it done, whereas, you know, Tom settles in pretty good. I know you're a big fan of the movie For the Love of the Game.
Yeah.
So am I, and that's very much the way when I clear the mechanism, it doesn't really matter, and just struggled the first couple days to get that done.
You know, I had to fill in at Portland last week. I was coming back from Vegas, and their guy couldn't make it, and the first few races, it felt like somebody's like, "Oh, it's like riding a bicycle." And I said, well, "It's like riding a bicycle, like downhill and naked, because I am not like it got." And then I listened back, and it's like, "Okay, I got through it. It was fine." But you just, it does take a while, especially like new circumstances. Like when I went to Louisiana Downs, it took a good 3 weeks or a month, I'd say, before it was like, "Okay, I feel at home here." And I imagine that's still something you're going through. Plus, it is the world's smallest announcer's booth there.
Yeah, it's pretty small. I think Los Al might have it beat, but it would be a close photo. I think you can appreciate, you know, I went through the same things where I didn't think the calls were all that good. And then, of course, I went back and listened to them, and I said, man, they sound a lot better going out than they felt like mm-hmm. they were going in when I was giving them.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and that's, you know, like you said, that's some people being their own worst critic. And also, it just, a lot of times, I always say this, the visual of seeing on TV a track that you've seen for a lot of years that you've associated with another voice, it just takes a while to get used to hearing that voice with that scene. I mean, we've heard Larry Colmus for 20 years, but when you hear him at Saratoga for the first few weeks, it takes a while to actually sound like Larry Colmus again, as weird as that sounds.
Yeah, I think there's probably some truth to that. And to be honest, I mean, I kind of adjusted my style a little bit the first couple of days to kind of just as bare bones a job as I could, so I didn't get myself in a switch. You know, if you try to do too much, then that's when you set yourself up for multiple mistakes. So the last couple of days, I felt like I've really settled in, so I'm looking forward to just getting easier from here.
Peter Aiello joining us here on the Bet America Radio Network. And, Pete, you know, we'll talk a little bit more about Oaklawn in a minute. I wanted to get some of your backstory, though. I know you're a longtime Florida guy, and how did you catch the racing bug down there?
Going to Hialeah Park when I was 3 years old, and I think I was probably 8 or 9 years old by the time I was making parimutuel wagers, which, by the way, shameless plug for our fans at the Bet America Radio Network, because I am a loyal Bet America customer as well. So I wasn't when I was 9 years old, obviously. I was the father making my wager variety, but I was a big fan of the game, and, you know, just since I got older, I learned how to read the racing form, and My actual introduction into race calling is somewhat of interest to a lot of people, in the sense that my father bought me a horse racing computer game, and it didn't have an announcer in it. So I loved the game, but I was playing this game for hours and hours and hours on end, and there was no announcer. So there came a point where I was kind of burned out on the game in terms of the actual gameplay of it, but I still liked playing it. So I just would write the names down and watch these little cartoon races, which were actually run, you know, in real time. So a 6-furlong race would really take 1:10. And I just started mumbling to myself and got louder and louder and louder.
Yeah, it's funny. I hear a lot of announcers with similar stories. Like, I know Robert Geller was telling me, you know, he had, like, horse toys in the background that he would run races as a kid, and Travis said the same thing. And I used to – our neighborhood was an oval, so I would always just get on my bike, and after the day of longacres, would just ride around and, you know, sit there and do the Gary – and on the outside, here comes Captain Kondo, and, you know, and the neighbors all thought I was a lunatic. But it was – you know, it turns out for all of us, it was career preparation. But that it's funny how – at least with a lot of announcers I've talked to, like, it does, that particular thing does catch you early on.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I was talking to a grade school friend of mine that I hadn't connected with until recently, and he asked, you know, he connected on Facebook. He said, "So what do you do for a living?" I said, "I'm a track announcer, so I'm in broadcasting." And he just laughed, and he said, "I can remember playing Super Nintendo when we were 7 years old and we were playing Ken Griffey Jr. baseball, and you would always feel the need to be the play-by-play guy." So that doesn't surprise me to hear that you're in broadcasting. That's what I would have figured you would have been in.
That's kind of funny how that works. And then you're also you went to the U of A racetrack program, right?
Yeah. Just being a fan of the racing industry and not really having any connections on the front side or the back side, the racetrack industry program was a great gateway for me to get those contacts and to kind of build on opportunities that I would normally not have had.
And it was there you got to meet, of course, our mutual friend, the great Luke Kreitboss.
Yeah, if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't have a career. He took me under his wing when I was, the very first thing that they ask you when you get to the U of A is, what facet of the business would you like to work in? Usually it's, front side or back side. A lot of times the students don't really know within that realm what it is they want to do other than, maybe be a trainer or something like that. But I said to him right off the bat, I said, I want to be a track announcer. And they just, I think some of the program folks actually somewhat rolled their eyes like, oh, no, none of them are one of these guys. But, Luke being an alumni of the program, they put me in contact with him actually my first semester in college. So I started in August, and I was introduced to Luke the first week of December 2004. And we had lunch, and he was real nice. And he kind of told me and said, listen, I'm gonna be real honest and real hard on you early on because, you're at a point now in your life and in your career that if calling races is not something that you're meant to do or that you're good enough to do, that you have enough time within the confines of the curriculum to go back and come up with a backup plan or to redirect some of your passion, to another side of the business. So about 5 weeks later, he gave me an opportunity to call a race at Rito Park in Tucson. It was a half mile maiden race for an $1,100 purse. And I called the race, and it's really divine even looking back on it. I mean, I thought it was significant then, and then looking back on it now, how divine it was that Turf Paradise had canceled that day. It was raining in Phoenix, but it wasn't in Tucson, so Luke drove down for the day to hear my call. And I remember coming down the stairs, and I looked at him when I got down the stairs. I said, well, what do you think, Luke? And he looks off into the distance. He looks left. He looks right. He says, well, kid, you don't suck.
That's fantastic. Yeah, I swear, I always used to call him the announcer godfather because he kind of knew everybody. And there's probably, a dozen guys that you can point to that he's kind of been instrumental in the early part of their career. And I'll never forget, he called me. It was actually my birthday in my first year at River Downs, and he called me and told me I was doing a good job. And to get that call from he was calling from the booth at Churchill between races. He was the coolest guy. I mean, he always went out of his way to help others, which, I know a lot of people say about people after they die, but I always said it about him before, while he was still alive.
Yeah, absolutely. Me too. I mean, I think that it always is always kind of a bittersweet situation because, there's nobody in the planet other than Luke and I that are as close to this situation as you were at the time, which is when I took over for you at River Downs. You had a lot to do with that, and Luke had a lot to do with that. And it was 8 weeks later that he passed away. So it was kind of like I was kind of the last samurai under his tutelage kind of thing. And it's not something that's ever lost on me. I think about it pretty much every day.
You mentioned, and I was going to get to the River Downs thing, but you worked a couple of odd racing jobs before actually getting your announcing break, right?
Yeah. When I called that first race and Luke said that didn't suck, he gave me an opportunity to work on the Arizona County Fair Circuit announcing races. And if anyone wants to torture themselves with hearing some of that, I actually found one of those tapes and had a friend put it on YouTube. So just type in Arizona County horse racing in YouTube and you'll find a link of, I think there's three venues on there from when I first started. And some of it's pretty ugly if you want to laugh about it with me.
Is it under like Air Forbes or something like that?
Yes.
Yeah.
My friend John Forbes, who's working at Golden Gate Fields now, he was kind of it was the one and one entry, 1A kind of scenario, so he did that for me.
Yeah, it's funny because I when I was researching for the interview, I looked that up and I saw that. I go, I wonder if that, because it doesn't say, calls by Peter Aiello, it just says, the fair meet or whatever.
Yeah, it was, actually, believe it or not, I had all my DVDs from every race I ever called. I had the master copies in a box in my car. And one of the summers that I was working in Cincinnati, I get my car got broke into Fortunately enough for me, I actually, this is always funny to me, everybody else in the parking lot got their windows smashed, but I was smart enough not to leave my car locked, so they didn't need to smash my windows. But they took a case of Coke that I had in the back seat. That would be Coca-Cola, by the way, not the illegal variety.
Yep.
And all of my DVDs. So they got like four or five Adam Sandler DVDs and then a bunch of racing stuff that they would have no interest in.
I love how, being from Miami, you have to clarify the Coca-Cola thing.
Yeah, and you are definitely right that that's the word that jumps into play.
Peter Aiello joining us here on the Bet America Radio Network. And, you know, you mentioned about how Luke, was instrumental in getting your first job. And the way I remember it was, I was at River Downs 06, 07 in the first few weeks of 08, and I was greatly struggling with anxiety and depression issues and just kind of life issues, I guess. And I decided, I said, you know what, I'm going to move home. Living on the road, just not for me right now. And so I remember I moved back, and Ed Meyer was going to fill in for a while. And I remember they asked me, they said, well, who do you know that can replace? And I said, well, I don't really know anybody. And I told our mutual friend now, Vince, I said, call Luke Kreitboss and see if he knows anybody. And so I talked to Vince that night, and he goes, Luke mentioned a kid, Peter Aiello. Do you know him? I said, no. I said, but I said, I'm sure he's good. Just get somebody in there. Because, you know, Ed hadn't called races really at that point, and so he was kind of in a bad spot. But I remember initially you weren't going to take it, right?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I remember the story a little bit different. Okay. In the sense that you had sent me a MySpace message wanting to know if I had any interest in the job, and that you had heard me call dog races in Tucson. To this day, I don't believe you on that, but it was nice research on your part. But did I want to take the job? And I remember telling you, that I really wanted the job, but that I was loyal to Prairie Meadows. I was working as the assistant racing secretary at Prairie Meadows at the time. Yeah. And so you said, okay, well, I just thought I might be able to help, and et cetera, et cetera. So I said, thanks very much. I think it was all of 24 hours later, I was sitting in the clubhouse at Prairie Meadows on my off day, partaking in a variety of wagering screen-to-screen combat. And Luke called me, and I guess the story, now you might know this better, but apparently it got back to Luke that I said no.
Uh-huh.
And Luke called me, and it's a conversation that was pretty well life-changing, I think. And he called me everything but a nice guy. Let's just leave it at that.
Now, Peter, we're on podcast. There's no censorship, but what?
Yeah, but there probably should be a little decorum anyway. But,
sure.
Let's just say if it wasn't on HBO, it would be bleep, 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 you, bleep, bleep, bleep.
Yeah.
And in essence, what he was trying to convey to me was that there comes a time in life where you have an opportunity that you're not going to have again, and you have to jump on that opportunity and look out for what's best in your long-term best interest. And the story is great, really. I mean, I love it because both the people that were involved in this, both Luke and my boss at the time, Dan Ducey, are no longer with us. So it's one of those stories that I just smile every time I think about it. So I tell Luke, yeah, sure, I'll take the job. He says, well, okay, I'll call Vince and tell him you'll be there. You know, when do you get there? And I remember saying, well, at least let me give him 2 weeks, Mm-hmm. I owe him that much. And he says, okay. He says, I'll see you soon. So about two or three days go by, and I haven't told Prairie Meadows yet, and I haven't slept, and I'm losing sleep, and I'm trying to figure out economically how I'm even going to make this work.
Mm-hmm.
And so finally I go into my boss's office, Dan Ducey. And for those who were horse players for a long time, this is Tim Ducey's brother. He was the director of racing at Prairie Meadows. And I said, Dan, I said, can I talk to you for a minute? And he said, sure. He said, shut the door. And so I walked in, and he says, now sit down. He says, but before you tell me what you have to tell me, I have a question for you. And I said, what's that, Dan? He says, did you come in here to tell me that you took the announcer job at River Downs? And my face dropped and my heart sank. And I said, yes, that's exactly what I came in here to tell you. And he says, oh, good. He says, I would have hated to have to have fired you. And I remember, I was like, it's surreal. I'm like, what do you mean fire me? I said, I'm doing a great job for you, don't you think? I said, I think I've got over with everyone pretty well. And he says, oh, yeah, you've been doing a great job. He says, but if I have found out that you passed up your dream job for working for me or feeling some sort of allegiance to Prairie Meadows or to me, he says, that would have made you a pussy. And I don't let pussies work for me, so you'd have been fired.
That's crazy.
So hopefully, you know, that's about as much as far as your censoring thing. I hope we don't have to censor that out, but that's true.
I got some beeps I can put in if it's too bad. But, you know, and Pete, River Downs, I always tell people, I said, it's not a big national track, but it was a really special place. And I haven't been back since it's been Belterra. But it was a really cool track.
Yeah, it really was. I mean, everybody says, you know, where are you from? Where is your home? And I always make sure to delineate, say, listen, you know, I'm from South Florida, but I only spent 6 years there, but my home will always be Cincinnati. I never felt more comfortable and at home. And I met so many good friends. I mean, lifelong friends, that when I was working there, that, it was, like you said, it was a very special place. And, you know, not for nothing. It really makes you appreciate when you go from a circuit like River Downs where I actually, this is funny, you might appreciate this. I was at a party here in Oaklawn the first week of the meet, and I met retired jockey Larry Melanson, and he introduces himself to me, nice soft-spoken guy, and I said, I have a story about you. And he says, yeah. He says, I don't know that we've ever met. I said, well, we haven't met before. I said, but the first year I was at River Downs, you came to ride the Cradle Stakes, and I remember feeling like I made the big time seeing you in the post parade. And it made him feel good, but he also laughed at the lunacy of what I was saying.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I want to say that he won the Cradle either the first or second year I was there. And I remember thinking the same thing. I'm like, wait a minute, this is a name I've heard on like TV. Like I remember getting to call Calvin Burrell at the post parade and getting to call Shug McGahee trained horse in the post parade for the Cradle. It was like just the coolest thing at that time. I was like, how crazy is this? These guys have been on TVG.
Yeah, absolutely. And how about, you know, the first time that you and I got to hear our own race calls on TVG? That's also a big special moment, too.
My mom used to, because they always showed, they showed River Downs on TVG on Tuesdays, the whole card, because, you know, Tuesdays and summers, there wasn't a whole lot going on. So my mom used to just not go into work that day, and she would go out and garden and then come in for the race. And I'll never forget, she called me, and she goes, I really like this guy, Ken Rudolph. She goes, because he says your name every time when he sends the race out there. She goes, but this Matt Carruthers guy, she goes, he never does. that's all she, I mean, she doesn't know anything about horse racing. You know, all she cared about was that I said their name. And one of my other favorites was, she was at the sports book in Vegas at, I think Caesars or Harrah's. And it was a Tuesday. And she made him put River Downs on the big screen and turn the volume up.
That's great.
It was fantastic. That's great. But Peter Aiello, our guest here on the Bet America Radio Network, and you know, after River, you go down to South Florida, and I got to think that calling it, you know, you've called the trifecta of tracks down there. I got to think that's pretty special, you know, being from there and getting to call races at Gulfstream and Calder and Hialeah.
Well, I tell you, I think the most special thing was, as you just said, getting to do all three major Miami metropolitan markets in 1 year, because nobody had ever done it before. And to be honest with you, especially with the way things are with Calder now, or Gulfstream West, as it's called, and, you know, Hialeah being primarily quarter horse, I think that's one of those records that's never going to be broken kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I'm not one to stroke my own ego, but you touched on it very, very well when you introduced that idea. I'm a South Florida guy.
Yeah.
So that it is super special. I mean, because when you're going to the races anywhere, whether you're from Texas or Oregon or Seattle or Florida, you never really truly dream that you're going to get to work at those places. Mm-hmm. I know that, you know, Frank Marimotta, he's chasing his dream, getting ready to try and hopefully get the job at Santa Anita Park. And, you know, that was his stomping ground as a kid. So to get to go back to where I got started in the racing, because this was, it sounds cliche, but it was surreal. It really was.
Yeah, I've had the exact same experience with Emerald Downs. I've gotten to call probably 15 races or so there over the years. And it's, you know, each time it's really, like, my dad's buried on the hill behind the track. So, like, we had him buried where he's at so we could look down on the track, you know. And you think back of just, I mean, every Friday night during high school, that was where we went. And so it's amazing how much home. And that's why a lot of people, when they heard Frank quit Oaklawn to go to try for the job at Cincinnati, they're like, this guy's crazy. You know, he gave up a major meet to, you know, but you know, how many shots do you get at the dream job? And, you know, that kind of leads me to the next question. I was going to say, when you hear Frank's leaving Oakland, I mean, you know, it was right around the holidays and you know, news travels pretty fast in our circles. It was Oakland a track you had in the back of your mind that someday you'd like to work at if that job ever came open? Or was it just, hey, it came open, I want to talk to him, and then it happened?
Well, I want to give the listeners a little inside track to this. Jason already knows the answer to this question, everyone. He is the host of this program, so he has to ask it. No, I definitely wanted to work at Oaklawn. I know that I think both of us put in for the job when Frank got the job originally. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I can honestly say that Frank played a huge role, and I'm very thankful and grateful to him for getting me the job here at Oaklawn, because I had a head start on it, a pretty darn good head start on it. I think I had spoke to the director of racing here, David Longinotti. I think we had spoke twice before the regular public knew there was a job to have.
Yeah. And so he calls you and you guys talk and you take the job. I got to imagine, is it one of those deals where you're by yourself and you hang up the phone and then you scream around the room, or do you just say, oh, crap, what did I just do?
Definitely the latter.
Uh-huh.
Because we were right getting ready to open the race meet at Hialeah, and you know, the folks at Hialeah have been just so good to me. I can't say enough good about the Brunetti family and everybody at Hialeah. So I can actually tell you, when I called and this all was going on, I talked to Frank first, and then Frank told me to call David, and I was actually at Hialeah, so I was walking away from everyone else because, you know, invariably someone's going to stop me and ask me a question about something. So I started, if you can picture the racetrack surface for those listeners who are trying to follow along here, I started right past the finish line with my walk. And I walked the outside rail all the way to about the 6 furlong mark. So I was all the way around the first turn at Hialeah before the time I hung up the phone, and then had about a quarter of a mile, 3/8 of a mile to gain my composure as I went back to my office.
Yeah, and it's funny how fast those things happen, because even if you know about it in advance, we're talking a couple of days in advance, you know, and not only are you like, oh, okay, I have a new job, but you got to move and you got to make accommodations, and you know, you have a full time deal at Hialeah. I mean, it's crazy how fast these things come up.
Yeah, and it was one of those things too where I knew ahead of time, before I ever got the official job offer, I mean, I was in a tricky spot because, yeah, you know, at the same time, I have to play a dead man's hand with everyone else and, you know, every one of their brothers calling wanting to know who's going to get the Oaklawn job. Yeah. And I just have to play dumb that I don't know. Little do they know that not only have I applied for it, that I'm, you know, 2 to 5 on the morning line to get the job.
I always laugh when, like, Twin Spires puts out a tweet poll of, like, who do you think's going to get the job? And I told a buddy of mine, I go, the funny thing is the two guys that got the lowest percentage, I think, are the two guys that are the chalk to get it. You know, because it's just,
yeah,
it's just everybody.
It's always great.
Yeah, it's real good for the confidence boost. But it's just funny. Like, every time these jobs come open, people speculate about who they think is going to get them, and they're almost always wrong. Like, there's a lot more, I think, that goes into it than just, oh, I like this guy's calls the best.
Well, I mean, I think, not to stand on a soapbox and go on too much of a rant here. Of course, I guess if I do, you can always edit it out.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
But I think one of the things is that racing fans invariably, just like anybody, whether you're a sports fan locally, nationally, or anywhere in between, you will always gravitate to the names and the voices that you're accustomed to hearing.
Mm-hmm.
Just as if you're a horse player, you're always going to gravitate. And for those of you who are listening that are horse players, I challenge any of you to, you know, feel free to message me or tweet me if I'm wrong about this, but your primary circuit is the circuit closest to your house. So based on that, the guys that have the biggest market presence, so, you know, guys like Vic Stauffer and you know, people like that, they've called on a national media. Mm-hmm. So they're nationally known names. And that doesn't take away from their ability. Obviously, they're there for a reason. Mm-hmm. But by the same token, it's just kind of like a farm system in baseball where, you know, there's some good players in the minor leagues. You just have to be a huge fan of the game to know who they are.
Yeah. No, it's interesting to see how it all plays out. And so take us, that first day at Oakland, what was that like? I mean, I imagine it's got to be a little bit overwhelming. Or did you just walk in there, you know, chest pumped up and like, I'm going to do this?
Well, I think it was a unique situation because I got to town on Monday and we opened on Friday. But the 4 days in between, I was making so many public appearances and doing so many TV interviews and radio interviews and newspaper interviews that and going to dinners and being a keynote speaker and the dinner where a bunch of elite businessmen from Little Rock are. And so there was just so much expectation and there was so much hype to not only opening day, but to my first call. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you, it got to me a little bit. It didn't get to me as bad as it could have, but it was one of those things where I had a lot of pressure, and some of it may have not have been well-founded, but I had a lot of pressure that I put on myself just based on all the expectations that everybody in the media had put on me.
Yeah, I remember sending you just a good luck text, and you're like, I'll talk to you in like 3 weeks. I'm so busy right now. I imagine it had to just be crazy that first week.
Yeah, I mean, and it's one of those things. I mean, even honestly, here we are, the getting ready to go on the second week of February, and there are some very, very close friends of mine that I have not got to call and sit down and talk to explain how everything's been going and give an update to my life. And it's not personal. If anything, it's the opposite. I'm not one of those guys that wants to just call for 5 minutes and then go, hey, I've got to go. Good talking to you. I mean, I want to talk about me for an hour, and then I want to talk about you for an hour. So if I don't have 2 hours, you know, I'm being a little exaggeratory there with the hours. But the point is that I want to have a legitimate conversation, and I just haven't had the time to do that.
And one of the things that strikes me as kind of funny in all this is having known you now since, you know, 08 or so, you were kind of always the guy who was going to be totally cool with calling at a small track for 35 years. And I remember, you know, I remember you saying things in the vein of, you know, I'd probably rather go work at, you know, at River Downs than at, you know, Santa Anita or something like that. And like, I think about it, I go, I bet Pete wouldn't even apply for the Santa Anita job if the Oakland thing hadn't worked out. And so it's interesting. It's kind of funny how now, you know, you get to call races at Oakland and Gulfstream Park. It's funny how things work out like that.
Well, I mean, I can honestly tell you with absolutely zero reservation, I had zero interest in the Santa Anita job.
Yeah.
I wasn't applying for that, regardless of what happened with Oaklawn or anything else.
Uh-huh.
It just wasn't of interest to me in my point in my career. And you're very much correct, and I still stand behind that. That I want to go somewhere where racing is a passion for the people on the front side and the back side, and everywhere in between. Mm-hmm. And it just so happens that the Bermuda Triangle, if you will, of passionate racing fans, passionate racetrack management, and passionate horsemen all intersect at Oaklawn Park, so that makes for a world-class operation as well. So that's one of those things where, actually, my friend Curtis Cody, he said to me, he goes, aren't you excited to call in the Arkansas Derby? And I said, you know, I hadn't even thought about the Arkansas Derby until you mentioned that. The world-class racing is a bonus, but everything else leading up to that is what I'm attracted to. Getting to go into, you know, I can't even tell you, like, the word is obscene. It's really ridiculous. I went into the grocery store last night, and I posed for pictures for 10 minutes. And it's like, you know, as you said, from knowing me for so long, it's like, why am I a big deal? I shouldn't be a big deal to anybody. But just the community rallies around the operation just as much in this town, and it's really great.
Yeah, and to some degree, and I hope this doesn't come off as any kind of condescension toward Oaklawn, it does have a smaller track feel a little bit to it. I mean, it's a little bit rural. It's, you know, an older building, but the racing obviously is world class. The operation is world class, but it's kind of a, like, it's not the grand dame like Santa Anita or Gulfstream in terms of just a physical presence feeling. Like, it does have a little bit of a small track feel.
Well, I think a lot of that has to do with the location and the surrounding area. I mean, you know, all of the metropolis racetracks are surrounded by metropolises.
Yeah.
In Oakland, it's not. Hot Springs is very much a rural community, but operationally, it's great. I mean, I remember going to Gulfstream as a kid and being amazed at the fact that there was a box office where you would need to buy seats.
Yeah.
And, of course, they don't have that anymore, and I don't. Maybe Santa Anita still does it. They would probably be about the only ones. And,
yeah.
You know, New York venues on big days. And then you go into walking around meeting everyone at Oaklawn, and I go into the box office, and there's seven girls working in there taking reservations for nine different venues.
Yeah.
And, you know, telling people that are calling a week before we open that, sorry, sir, we don't have any seats that weekend. I love that. That was a throwback for me. I mean, and I mean that in a very good way.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
I think a lot of times it's just human nature to try to evolve and to try to try to do things in either a more efficient manner or you know, a more modern manner. But I sometimes think, especially with horse racing, that we try to fix things that aren't broken, and then the things that are broken, we don't worry about trying to fix. So for me, getting to see the operation being run, you know, kind of like a time capsule, like it would have been in the early 90s in Florida, was really it was a great experience.
Yeah, it's a cool place, and I'll never forget. When I heard the job was open, I sent you a message. I said, "Man, this would be a perfect spot for you," and I meant it. And I hope the meet continues to go well, Pete. And maybe we'll catch up to you a little bit later as we get towards Arkansas Derby Day.
Absolutely, I'm happy to talk to you anytime. And for those who are listening to this, if you haven't already, feel free to follow me on Twitter, even though I'm not very active on it, as Jason will tell you. And I am much more active on the Facebook scene, so if you have a Facebook account, feel free to send me a friend request, and we can interact that way.
And you are at Announcer Pete, right?
Indeed.
All right.
Indeed. Well, but like I said, I haven't figured out the whole Twitter thing. I took a picture of my patio of my apartment yesterday, or a couple of days ago, with the hashtag now what? Because I really just don't understand what it is that people want me to say on Twitter.
One of my biggest jerk moves of my life was when Larry went up to Churchill or New York or wherever he was going, and I said, "Hey Larry, is Peter going to update us about the Rainbow Six carryovers?" Because Larry, you know, does it every 10 seconds, and Larry goes, "That's a good point." And you call me the next day and you go, "They want me to tweet the damn carryovers now."
Absolutely. As my good friend from Ohio would have said, thank you very little for that.
Oh, man. I don't know if it's the same friend from Ohio, but I want to eventually have an Arnie Metz retrospective on the show where that's one of my goals.
Let me tell you. There's a couple different thoughts I have immediately when you say that. Number one, I'm glad you don't have a censor because it wouldn't be nearly as good. Number two, I'd be happy to co-host that with you if you'd like. Or number three, please let me know when that's taking place so I can at least call in.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking we'll get Pete Rose to come on. We'll get you. We'll get McDoolin, and it can just be an hour of Arnie stories.
I can tell you this: if there's anybody who works for a cell phone company that's listening to this podcast, you definitely want in on this guy Arnie Metz that we're talking about. He works for Equibase, and he's a good, great mutual friend of Jason and I's, and he would be somebody that business-wise you would want to have as a client because he's gone through more cell phones than anybody I've ever met.
Oh, man. We'll save the Arnie stories for another day. But, Pete, thanks so much, buddy. We appreciate it. And we'll be back after the short timeouts of the Bet America Radio Network.
This is the Bet America Radio Network. You're in the barn with Jason Beam.
All right, so my thanks to Peter Aiello for joining us. Really fun conversation. Love talking to Pete, and hadn't got to talk to him actually since he moved up to Oaklawn for that job. So really excited to get up to be able to catch up with him. Pete's just he's got a big heart. He's just one of the good dudes that you'll meet in this sport. And there is a lot of really cool people in racing, and we hope forward to talking to more of them and hearing from more of you great people out there in podcast land. Don't forget, you can always contact the show, barn@betamerica.com. Find me on Twitter at BeamyAwards, BeamyAwards. And of course, follow us on Twitter at BetAmerica. We're getting close to 5,000 followers on the BetAmerica Twitter account. But, you know, so if you're not following us on there yet, do so. Go to betamerica.com/extra for a ton of cool extra stuff I mentioned earlier in the show. There's a ton of Dubai information there that comes out Wednesday mornings for the big Thursday cards there, as well as all your BetAmerica Radio Network information you'll ever need. And be sure to sign up if you're not playing the races with us yet, that great $300 bonus or matching up to $300 for your first deposit. So all that can be found at betamerica.com and betamerica.com/extra. So that being said, we will see you guys tomorrow for a Thursday edition of the Barn. Hope everybody has a great Wednesday. Pick some winners and nurse that Fat Tuesday hangover. And everybody have a great rest of your day. We'll talk with y'all soon. We'll talk with you tomorrow here in the Barn.